and welcome to Off the Bench. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
And I'm Harry from Fantasy Football Scouts.
So Harry, Game Week 3 finished with Liverpool's hugely shocking defeat against Manchester United. I don't think that that was something that any of us were necessarily expecting. Although maybe we should have been, because Liverpool's form going into this one wasn't hugely great either. But because Manchester United had been on a difficult run, I think we were all kind of expecting that Liverpool would overcome their problems and win this one.
Yeah, two teams going into this game, both not on good form. Liverpool only picking up 2 points from their opening two games as well. But Manchester United, I think their form was probably the more concerning of the two. The home fixture, maybe we should have thought slightly favoured it towards Manchester United, but I still expected Liverpool to come out on top there. But the performances, although I think that's the possession statistics for Liverpool were much better, we didn't really see them get into their groove again for the third week in a row now.
So how did your game week go generally? Was it massively down because of the Liverpool performance?
It wasn't massively down. I actually captained Salah, and although he didn't have one of his best games, he popped up with a goal, as Salah often does. But 16 points for him, and I actually sold Robertson going into this week, so quite happy with that.
Although
I did, yeah, I moved to Reece James, so not that much better. But I think a lot of us looking at our defences going into this week, we thought we'd get a lot more points than maybe we did. Maybe those with Brighton defenders like Sanchez and Gold did better. I brought in Pascal Gross as well. Wish I'd gone with Rodrigo now, but still six points for him is okay. And Haaland up front. And then Martinelli as well, like a lot of people have now. But that Salah captain return really boosted my final day. How about you?
Yeah, mine was the same, to be honest. It was a bit of a one disaster after another. I remember sitting there on Saturday morning looking at my team and thinking, this feels like a really nice team for this game week. Teams with good form, good fixtures, should do really well. I mean, the five of them that I had in defence in total got 3 points. And you kind of go, when you've spent that much budget, because I've got Edison in goal, he just got that 1-pointer alongside Cancelo with nothing. Nico Williams was kind of the best one, I suppose, of my defenders. Still only got the one, but his clean sheet looked like it might stick for a lot longer than the others did. And when he's at his price point of 4 million, you kind of don't mind if his clean sheets go. But with the rest of them, when you're spending that level of budget that I've spent on Cancelo and Trent and Reece James, you're like, actually, I really want some returns. And like you, I bought Reece James in this week for a -4 as well. So for him to not only not get a clean sheet and get no attacking returns and have cost me 4 points, just, it wasn't fun.
Yeah, well, my highest scoring defender is Patterson of Everton at 2 points, and I'm staring at Trent, Cancelo and Reece James with a combined 1. I'm thinking, not quite sure exactly where I'm spending that budget. And then I've got, I think like a lot of people as well, Trippier with a 6 sat second on my bench as well after that goal. I can't really beat myself up about that one though. Away at Manchester City, or home to Manchester City, I didn't really expect that much more from him, to be honest. And he almost got sent off. Luckily, VAR removed it because I do need him in my lineup for next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking exactly the same. Like, I'd benched him this week because I was fully expecting Manchester City to score, but wanted him in my team going into game week 4. And then when that red card got flashed, I was like, oh no, this feels like I'm going to have to spend more points now to deal with another problem, because I'm definitely going to want him in my starting lineup. So when I saw that red card get rescinded, I was like, breathe a bit of a sigh of relief, I think, there. All right, well, let's get into game week 3 then and talk about the bad stuff that happened, because there was a lot of disappointments, I think, as FPL managers in this one. And I was looking before we came on about, you know, how the premiums have been doing. Because for me, it's been the premiums that have been the biggest disappointment of the season so far. Only 4 of them that have been priced over 7.5 in the game have returned more than 20 points so far. I guess they're the 4 that you would expect. It's KDB, it's Haaland, it's Jesus, and it's Salah after his goal last night. But what does this actually mean for the premiums? Are you thinking going heavy on premiums is still the right thing to do? Or are you, like me, starting to think, maybe I don't want all of these premiums in my team?
So I fit in the sort of quite squad structure type manager. So I only have 2 of them, and I have Salah and Haaland, and I've had them since game week 1. I have Jesus as well. I think he's slightly cheaper. And I think, again, we've seen him rise to the highest ownership that any player has ever had in FPL now. And I think that's fair enough coming in at 8.2 million now. But Haaland looks really key and really vocal in that Manchester City team. I know we'll talk a little bit about Pep's comments about how maybe he's not going to play every week when they start playing 3 times a week. But Salah is the type of player, again, we saw it last night, that he doesn't have to be heavily involved and he still gets returns. And I feel comfortable in captaining him. And that's a big thing for me, and having a captain that I feel I can trust. But I think the big ones that really stand out, and we can talk about them, is Harry Kane and Son. I think a lot of people went for them early on, and they are the two that really haven't performed as well as we'd expected. Son, with just one assist to his name so far this season, hasn't really looked on it, losing some set pieces now with Perisic being back in the team. Those people with, you know, triple premiums with Son or Kane as one of them, when Ivan Toney is matching or outscoring Harry Kane, for example, or you get Rodrigo outscoring Son, that's when I think it becomes quite difficult to have that third premium. I don't want to go and say too nasty things about Tottenham with you here, but
it's not with me around.
It's Son and Kane and maybe Kulusevski as well that are, I think, causing a lot of pain for people.
It's interesting, isn't it, with the Spurs boys? Because I think going into the season, a lot of FPL managers were thinking, I want to have investment in Spurs. And they were obviously looking towards the likes of Son and Kane in order to do that. But they're expensive, they were premium price, and it was difficult to own them. When I look at them now, obviously Kane, I feel slightly more positive about than I do Son. And I think if you're a Kane owner with back-to-back returns in the last couple, in games where Spurs haven't necessarily performed at their best, and you kind of looking at them going against Chelsea, they were distinctly average in the first half, did get better in the second half and kind of ground something out in game week two. In game week three against Wolves, they were really under par, I thought, for a lot of the game. Really slow. I mean, that tends to happen with Spurs in the 12:30 kickoffs, but still got the win out of the game. And of course, it's still Kane that does it. But when you look at the underlying stats for Son, my immediate reaction as he was substituted in that game was, you just can't own Son anymore. He's just a non-event in FPL right now because his price point is so high and you're looking at the likes of KDB in comparison. And there isn't really a comparison right now in how they're performing. But actually, his underlying stats aren't as bad maybe as I first feared when I was watching him perform in that game. He was sixth for XG underachievers in game week three, which suggests to me that, you know, there was potential in that game that he would have got something out of it. He was also top for crosses in the Spurs team across the season so far with 17. He's created 5 chances created. Now, I guess the difficulty with that is when you look at him in comparison to, say, Kulusevski, Kulusevski's created more chances than he has, and he's like 4 million cheaper. So it's difficult to own Son right now, I think.
Yeah, and it seems to be interesting that it's not Kulusevski where everyone worried about the one coming off when Richarlison comes onto the pitch. Mm. It's actually Son, the one that's coming off after 75 minutes. I think everyone pre-season didn't necessarily want to own Kulusevski because they thought when those minutes come, when the 60th minute come, he'll be off, Richarlison will come on, it'll be a straight swap. But really interesting to see that it is Son. Now, that's left-hand side is slightly more where you'd expect to see Richarlison play at slightly more his favoured position, but you did kind of expect that maybe they'd do some moving around to have Son still on the pitch when they brought Richarlison on. And then I think the big one for me this weekend, one of the big appeals for Son, even when he's not on form, is the fact that he's on a lot of set pieces and a lot of corners as well. And if we're starting to see Perisic take them, and he took them really well, it actually was Son's corner that the goal led from, but it was a Perisic flick on. And seeing him lose some of those, seeing him not be a 90-minute man anymore, just means that that 12 million price bracket, which has already started to fall, it just feels really, really difficult to go and invest in him now.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, when you're looking at the way that Spurs are playing and the system and the changes, you know, Conte is absolutely using the 5 subs to the best of his advantage at the moment, making a lot of changes. And that, for me, is a bit of a warning signal to owning FPL assets in Spurs, because we've already seen with the wingbacks that he moves them around and he rotates them. And with the Perisic, Sessegnon side, there's always going to be some rotation there. And I think, you know, over the next few weeks, as we start to see Spurs playing more games in a week, you know, it starts next week with obviously the game week in the middle of the week, followed by the weekend action. It'll be interesting to see who gets the starts across those 3 matches in game week 4, game week 5, and game week 6. And then, of course, when the Champions League kicks off, we're going to have even more potential rotation in that wing-back position. That makes me wary. But in the past, Son and Kane have always been players that you kind of, you can hang your hats on the minutes from them and you don't have to worry about them being rotated. Son feels a bit more like he's going to get some resting minutes because we need him. He's important to the way that Spurs play. But with Richarlison part of the squad now and with Kulusevski able to play in multiple positions and drop back, that also gives him more security of minutes. Having said all of this, though, the 8 million bracket in the midfield also were pretty awful in game week 3 in a way that maybe they haven't been over the course of the season so far, but, you know, I'm looking at the players like Saka and Mount and Foden and Luis Diaz. And yes, Luis Diaz got points last week, but this week I thought he was off it again. These players are expensive, that mid-price bracket. And you said earlier, you're a manager that likes to kind of play the price points and make sure the squad is balanced. And that's exactly how I am. I like to make sure that if there's a player that really starts performing well, I can go to them easily and quickly. But I'm looking at that midfield 8 million bracket right now and thinking, I actually don't know who I would obviously pick. Kulusevski is maybe the one that stands out for me. He's passing the eye test a little bit more than the others, but I don't know that I'm that attracted to any of them in that bracket. What do you think?
Yeah, so I've got Saka at the moment, and I can't believe that he's only had one assist to his name so far this season, no goal involvement, and they've scored 7 times in the past 2 game weeks. I have to say, it's a bit of a difficult one to take. But interestingly, looking at it, the highest 8 million midfielder that we had at the start of the season ranks 10th as the highest scoring midfielder, and it's Maddison. It's not even one of the ones that we were considering really owning for the start of the season. It was kind of, we had these 8 million midfielders that we wanted plus Maddison because their fixtures were very difficult to start the season. And he's actually the one that started the best, again, scored this week. But being the 10th highest scorer amongst midfielders is really, really difficult. Diaz, I do expect to continue to do well. Like, we'll talk about it with people potentially selling the likes of Trent, Robertson and Salah being transferred out this week with Bournemouth at home this week. I find it, again, difficult before that fixture potentially to move them out. But the fixture debate is what I have with Saka every single week. I had it last week and then he had Bournemouth away and I was like, I'm not selling him before he has that fixture. And then I'm not selling him before he has Fulham at home. And then I'm not going to want to sell him before he has Aston Villa at home as well. And eventually I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and move him on if he doesn't do it. But they're going to keep scoring goals. I have Saka and I have Martinelli as well. So it's not a simple switch there, but they're just not returning. And I don't think any of them have got a return in more than one game week so far. And when you have the likes of Rodrigo or you have the likes of Pascal Gross getting more consistent returns for a fraction of the price, and then Martinelli, of course, as well, it seems really difficult. And I'm a price point person, but this might be the easy way that I'd get out of them if they just don't get back on the score sheet.
I mean, I feel exactly the same about Luis Diaz, right? So I've owned Luis Diaz since the start of the season. Going into game week 2, I wasn't sure if I wanted to keep him or not, because I wasn't that impressed by his performance in game week 1. But I was a bit like, you know, I'm going to play the fixtures a little bit here. First home game of the season. Let's give him that, see how he gets on. And maybe I'll sell ahead of game week 3. When Nunez got sent off in game week 2, Luis Diaz seemed to come to life. And I was like, okay, maybe what I've got now is the Luis Diaz that I thought I was investing in before game week 1. But then last night, I watched him very carefully because he's that player that, you know, like you said, I keep longingly looking over at players like Rodrigo, even Harrison and Aronson at Leeds. Like, those Leeds boys are really attractive right now. The fixtures are nice. Got players like Gross at Brighton. And we'll talk about these guys later when we talk about the successes of Game Week 3, because they're going to come up there. But I keep looking at them thinking, you look really nice players that I would really like to own right now. And then looking at Luis Diaz and thinking, I could save a lot of budget if I sold you. And then that budget could be used elsewhere across my team. I just feel like at the moment, the 8 million bracket is a bracket that I'm not convinced that I want to be invested in. But then Luis Diaz plays Bournemouth in game week 4. And selling him ahead of that feels difficult. But at some point, I think you just have to go, right, this is the problem area in my team. And I always say that when I'm making my transfers, the player that I target for my transfer out should be the one that is the biggest weakness in my team and that's causing me the most issues. And at the moment, it feels like it's that 8 million bracket alongside maybe my premium defenders that are causing me the most issues right now.
Yeah, again, those premium defenders this week in particular were not good enough. And again, those of you who still held onto Robertson, Trent, Cancelo, Reece James, all in there. We'll go to Chelsea, and if I have to talk about it, we will.
Rip the Band-Aid off, Harry. Rip the Band-Aid off.
Let's just go for it. 3-0 loss to Leeds. So a performance that I just didn't see coming, and I'm not sure any of us really did. Reece James being back at centre back again. We saw Cucurella going at left wing back again at 5 million, a good price, but the defensive performance just wasn't there again. It didn't start well with Mendy giving away the first goal as a bit of a freebie. Then the second free kick was a great finish from Rodrigo, and things just went downhill from there, including that Koulibaly red card late on in the game. Reece James at centre back is one again that I think we'll move away from actually going into game week 4, because without Koulibaly, I think we might see Cucurella go into that left centre-back spot with Chilwell going at left wing-back, which means that we're not going to play a back three, which is Cucurella, Thiago Silva and Reece James. I don't think Tuchel's quite got it in him to go that maverick with those three. He has looked good. And if we take this week away, Reece James against Tottenham, for example, when he's at right wing-back,
he
is much better.
Him.
He was really good, particularly in that second, in that last 15, 20 minutes. And the fixtures going forward are still good. Leicester in game week 4 is a good fixture. And after that, it is still good. I still hold the faith that these premium defenders will come up trumps and they'll be good going forward. If you look at players at a similar price in midfield, although the Rodrigo's, the Grosses are doing well at the moment, they do tend to come and go, whereas you hope for the consistency from the likes of Trent, Cancelo and Reece James as well. Although Reece James for the past year, I say, has probably been the most hit and miss player we've had in FPL for quite a long time. You just got to hope that you get him for the weeks that he does his big returns. But you've brought him in for a -4. Presumably you're holding him, but it wasn't a great watch.
It wasn't a great start to owning him. No. And actually I was back and forwards on whether to go with him or Cucurella. And as soon as I did the Reece James transfer, I thought to myself, you know, why have you done this? You could have saved a million and gone with Cucurella instead. And actually, when you look at the underlying stats for that game, Cucurella was the most advanced Chelsea player, had 95 touches in the opponent's half, more than any other Chelsea player. And yes, there is some risk of rotation, I guess, when you look at the Chilwell threat for Cucurella, which Reece James doesn't necessarily have on the other side. But Reece James can be pulled in and play in that centre-back position. And I am now worried as a Reece James owner going into game week 4 that with Koulibaly suspended, then we might see him playing at centre-back again, which is where I don't want Reece James. I own Reece James and I've paid that extra million because I want the attacking threat that Reece James offers and that we saw against Spurs in game week 2. I am worried going into game week 4 that we're going to see the more defensive Reece James again. And I am also concerned that Leicester, they've been scoring goals. So is the clean sheet going to stick for Reece James? Having taken a -4 for him last week, I'm definitely going to hold him through game week 4. But you know, I'm already looking at my defence thinking there's a lot of money invested in you and maybe I want to reinvest that elsewhere on my pitch. So Reece James is definitely one that's kind of sitting there going, you might be getting sold in the next week or two if you don't actually start performing better, if Chelsea's defence doesn't become more solid. Now, actually, I think they will become more solid. Chelsea have got quality players, and there's particularly the defence. If they can sign another centre-back, which they're linked with lots of them at the moment in the winter, I mean, if you get somebody like Fofana coming in, then I think that makes Chelsea defence so much better an option. And I'll be pleased to own Reece James once that happens, because the risk of him playing a centre-back is less. The security that they will offer defensively means the chance of the clean sheets are more. But right now, with a lot of inconsistency, with Koulibaly suspended going into the next week, with the way that Chelsea lost quite dramatically to Leeds, I thought Leeds might score, but I didn't think that Chelsea would collapse in the way that they did in game week 3. It is a bit of a concern to me. And then the City defence, I've got two of them because I've doubled up with Edison and Cancelo. They'd been so solid and I was so delighted with the way the City had started the season defensively. You know, both of them have been picking up more than just the 6 points for clean sheets. And then this week we saw a bit of a collapse of their defence again. But I think that said more about the way that Newcastle played than it did about the City defence. So whilst I was frustrated as an Edison Cancelo owner, I'm not so worried about those guys because I think we'll go back to seeing defensive solidity when they're not playing against a team that were quite as gung-ho and quite as, brilliant, actually, as Newcastle were in that game.
Yeah, and I think we underestimate the impact that a centre-back going off early in a game can have on the structure of a defence, with Ake going off early. Even though he was being paired with John Stones in this game, a change like that, all the preparation that you've really got can go out of the window. And as you said, I think there's something in our minds that we need to change a Newcastle fixture from being maybe an easy one that we can look to target to what we've seen from Newcastle in the past 6 months. They look really good, both defensively and going forward, although they didn't, you know, defend that well, conceding 3, but conceding 3 to Manchester City is pretty easily done. They looked really good going forward, Newcastle. I'm not surprised to see them scoring games. I think that is not a fixture to target from a defensive point of view. Callum Wilson, we know, is a born goal scorer and he will do it when he stays fit. And when he stays fit is the big thing for Newcastle. But St. Maximin, again, a player that comes and goes in terms of his form, looked really good in this game. And it was a brilliant game for him to come in and show that he could do it. Trippier, again, a brilliant free kick. And we know what he's capable of doing. One that he's in my defence. And again, I thought about selling him midway through that game when the red card was originally shown, but we're still happy to have him in my team, especially with Wolves away in game week 4. I'm still pretty happy with Trippier coming in at 5 million. I think the big one we'll talk about when we get onto the successes of a game week is all of these defenders could offer a route to Ivan Perisic, though, which is the difficult thing for all of us. And how many minutes is he going to play? But I think Manchester City defence, I would expect them to keep the most clean sheets again this season. They've kept two in the first two and then conceded in game week three. From game week four onwards, I'd see no surprise to see it come back. Whether you've got Walker, whether you've got Diaz, whether it's Edison, Cancelo, I'd definitely be holding them because those clean sheet odds, the way they control games is still really good. We saw a Newcastle team come out and really put on a show at home in game week three. I don't expect many teams to be able to go and do that against Man City, though.
I couldn't agree with you more. If anything, I'm looking at my defence and it's Trent that I'm kind of thinking you might be the one that goes because like you say, there's been a number of standout defensive performances in the likes of Trippier, who you've mentioned, in the likes of Perisic, who we're definitely going to talk about in a minute, I'm sure. But I'm looking at Trent thinking, I've paid really premium prices for you. You had just one goal attempt on goal against Manchester United in game week three. You created just two chances. That's not the Trent that we know and love. And defensively, they're not quite right. And obviously, living in the house that I do with Lee, he always says it's all about who's playing in front of the defence and how secure those midfield defensive assets make the defence. And they haven't got the best options there. They have got a lot of injuries. They've got problems in that kind of centre-back position in terms of who's going to play with Van Dijk, whether it's Gomez, whether it's Matip, like whoever it is that's going to partner Van Dijk. It's not that consistency. And we saw this a couple of seasons ago with Liverpool, didn't we? Like that they just weren't defensively as solid. And it was fine because Trent was still picking up attacking returns. So you didn't mind if the clean sheet went so much. But if he's not getting the attacking returns that we're used to, because he's not quite that kind of bombing on threat down the wings that we're used to, and Liverpool aren't keeping clean sheets because they don't have their first choice centre-backs and they haven't got their first choice defensive midfielder partnerships available, why do we own a £7.5 million defender? And I think last week it was Robertson that was sold en masse because a lot of people had doubled up on the Liverpool defence. But as somebody that's just a single investment in the Liverpool defence, they are ones that I am looking to kind of think about moving on. And when I wildcard, I can't see me keeping Trent unless things dramatically improve over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so I was one of the people that sold Robertson going into this week, again, for Reece James, because I wasn't pleased with him more than Trent about his attacking output. He's getting subbed quite early for Tsimikas in both the past couple of games, and they're not keeping clean sheets as well. I'm realizing now how important Matip is to that Liverpool defence. Yeah. And even when I thought Joe Gomez came in, I thought, okay, we've seen him play in that position before. He used to have a really strong partnership with Van Dijk. Maybe they'd see an improved performance with that as a result, but it didn't really happen. No Thiago in midfield again, I think, is a big thing that really impacts that flow of Liverpool as well. And then again, as you said, Trent on that right-hand side, if he's not getting those attacking returns consistently enough, then 7.5 million is really difficult to pay. The issue again that we come back to, Bournemouth at home, Newcastle at home,
yeah,
Wolves at home and Everton away in their next four fixtures means I know what Trent is capable of doing in those four games. And he's capable of getting 10, 15 point hauls with an assist, with a goal, with a clean sheet and with bonus points as well. He's capable of getting those returns, but we're not seeing the defensive solidity. And I think I'm falling into a similar boat that you are. I'm not going to use a transfer on Trent. I think selling him with a free transfer is probably not that good, knowing what he's capable of doing. But if I was playing my wild card in the next couple of weeks, it would be a really difficult decision to make about whether I really want to hold him, because those performances are just not there from him. The amount of crosses he's putting in, those sorts of stats, is not the same as maybe we've seen in the past couple of seasons as well.
And I think normally when you're picking your teams, you kind of go, right, Trent's worth paying 7.5 for because of the attacking threat that he offers. And I always compare him with the midfielders that I could have for the same price. But when we look at what happened in game week three, we've got Rodrigo and Harrison. We've got Aronson. We've got people like Gross. We've got players like Gundogan at Manchester City, either at the same price or cheaper than Trent Alexander-Arnold, all offering far better underlying stats, far better attacking returns in game week three and prior to game week three as well. So therefore, the appeal of having Trent, because he gives attacking returns and the clean sheets for his £7.5 million price tag, is lost, because my potential options that I could have in midfield instead of having him, if I took him down to a, say, 4.5, 5 million defender, even if I went to Perisic, at Spurs with his slot, I would have so much additional money that I could invest. And that would mean that rather than having a 4.5 forward, I could up him to somebody like Tony in the forward line, or I could up my cheaper midfield players, likes of Bailey maybe at Aston Villa, and get to somebody like Rodrigo or Harrison instead. So there's definitely appeal. And I think that kind of leans us in quite nicely to talk about the good stuff that happened in game week 3, because there were a lot of it. It's just that a lot of it wasn't in my team this week, but they are players that I am really, really keen on. And I think we should start, if it's all right with you, with Leeds, because they, for me, are the team that are really, really impressing. They do not look like a team that nearly got relegated on the final day of the season, do they?
No, not at all. They looked really impressive, the way they're flowing. I think a lot of people worried about what would happen when Rafinha left and whether they'd be able to fill that void. And I think they've done that and probably look even better than maybe they did when Rafinha was in the team. Rodrigo, Harrison this week, Aaronson also getting that goal. Even with Patrick Bamford out injured this week, they still looked just as good and just as fluid. And I think that's something we've known from a Leeds team, is they are fluid as long as all of their top players are fit. And Bamford last year was the big one, that when he wasn't in the lineup, they struggled a lot. And it was really interesting to see in game week 3 their ability to do it without him. And I think the big player that allowed them to do that was Rodrigo. And I think just before game week 3 started, we had the press conference and he said, Rodrigo's really stepped up. He's shown that he can lead the team. He came out as captain in game week 3 and he has the ability to score goals and potentially on penalties when Bamford isn't on the pitch as well. Again, one of the very few players yet to blank in any game week so far this season, getting those returns in game week 3 against Chelsea, leading the line. I think that's the only thing to consider, is when Bamford comes back, is he going to be in the same position? Is he going to be quite as advanced as maybe we saw him in game week 3? But I still think, for me, out of Rodrigo, Harrison and Aaronson, Rodrigo would be the one that I'd be going with. Aaronson got a goal in game week 3, but pinching the ball off a goalkeeper is not necessarily something you're going to expect every single time. Thanks a lot, Mendy, for that one. And then Harrison as well. I think Harrison's the one, he's going to continue doing exactly what he's going to do at the moment. My issue with Rodrigo when Bamford comes back is what impact that's going to have. I know Harrison, when Bamford comes back, he's going to keep doing exactly the same as he is now. But I think Rodrigo would probably be the one that I go with based off how good he's looked and the confidence that he seems to be showing. That's such a big thing for me. Seeing a player high on confidence, they can continue to return at the way they are.
Totally. And I think, you know, Leeds are the team that I'm not invested in right now. That, well, I've got Sam Greenwood like half the game does, but I'm not invested in their actual starting 11 and I really want to be. And I think for me, Rodrigo has been the standout for a couple of game weeks now. You know, we know that he's rotation proof, even if Bamford is playing. He's not going to suddenly find himself sat on the bench. He's going to play every week. You're right, he might play in a slightly different position when Bamford comes back and we'll just have to see how that fits. But we're not talking about a 12, 10 million player here. We're talking about a really nice, I was going to call him mid-price, but I kind of think he's more like a budget enabler, really, at his price point. He's not quite expensive enough to hit that mid-price. He's sort of somewhere in the middle of those two. Highest scoring player in the game right now. He's second overall in the ICT index amongst forwards for both influence and threat. Only Jesus is beating him for those, and you've got to pay more for him. In a confident lead side who have got really nice fixtures, and that's the thing that you kind of have to kind of take a step back and look at, is in seasons gone by with Leeds, we'd have looked to invest in Rafinha or Bamford and maybe one of the defenders a couple of seasons ago. But last year when Bamford was injured, Rafinha felt very isolated and teams were targeting him as a player to kind of keep out of the game, because if they kept Rafinha quiet, they kept Leeds quiet. This season, you've got players like Rodrigo, you've got players like Harrison, new signing Aaronson, I really like. He was unlucky actually not to get some returns in game week 2 as well. And you're right, his goal in game week 3 isn't going to happen every week. But the confidence of him to go and do that highlights for me why Leeds are good investments. Because the new manager, well, it's not so new anymore, but he's got them settled and sorted and playing in an organised way where they look like they want to play together. And that for me is exactly the sort of team that you want to invest in from an FPL perspective. As has Potter got Brighton playing, because they are another team that I'm looking at right now, particularly the likes of Gross and Welbeck, who we'll talk about. But Sanchez, you mentioned earlier in the pod, if you'd invested in Sanchez at the start of the season, which a lot of managers did because he was that nice rotating 4.5 goalkeeper option, probably paired him with Danny Ward at Leicester when Kasper Schmeichel left, you probably played Sanchez this week. Not only did he keep the clean sheet, he picked up save points, picked up a bonus point, got an 8-point haul. which when you compare that to the premiums, all right, Lloris did the same at Spurs, but if you've gone with Edison, if you've gone with Alisson, obviously they've had a difficult game week. Sanchez, fourth highest scoring goalkeeper in the game right now, returns in all three matches, because even when he lost the clean sheet in game one, he's still got a save point and a bonus point. I think if I was wildcarding now, he would be my goalkeeper of choice.
Yeah, so I started the season with Sanchez and Ward, and unfortunately I played Sanchez in only game week two and game week three. I played Ward in game week one, and it was a very difficult decision that I, this week, with West Ham away versus Southampton at home between the two. And luckily I made the right call looking back in game week one when I made it wrong. But I would agree, I think Sanchez is the goalkeeper that I would look at. Again, the fixtures for Brighton on the horizon are really nice, coming up on the sort of top fixture ticker when you do look at that. The only other one that I potentially look at is Ramsdale of Arsenal. Again, they look really solid, and keeping clean sheets again in game week three, I would really be looking at them as a potential option. If you're on wildcard, it would be one of the two of Sanchez and Ramsdale that I go with. But as you said, the save points and bonus points that you're getting with Sanchez, as he's got again in game week three, is really, really impressive. I really like them. And in defense, there are a few others as well, like Veltman did well this week again. If you're looking at Lewis Dunk, a few of these options as well. But the option that Sanchez gets at 4.5 in goal would really be the one that I'm looking at from there. But going forward, I invested in Gross this week. Again, I wish I'd gone with Rodrigo. The reason I went with Gross is I looked at their sort of next four or five fixtures and thought, I think they're going to win all of these games. And if they're going to win all of these games, they're probably going to score two or so goals in them. And Gross has been involved. He's on set pieces. There was a small chance that he was on penalties, which got stamped out at the weekend when McAllister stepped up and took it and scored really well. But Welbeck, again, when he won that penalty, I think there was a little bit about, okay, Mopai, Welbeck, who's going to lead the line for Brighton? Although Mopai doesn't look like he's going to leave anymore, it does look like it's Welbeck's spot up front. And at 6.5 million, could be really nice, but he is competing with a couple of other forwards who have done really well in Mitrovic and Ivan Toney as well.
Well, let's talk about them now, because I think there is definitely a movement at the moment away from big at the back, which feels quite scary as an FPL manager that's played the game for years and years, because big at the back has been a strategy for such a long time now, to big up top. You've got to have Jesus. He's, like you said earlier, owned by over 80% of the game, the most highly owned FPL player ever in the game. You pair him probably with Haaland or Kane, and maybe there's a discussion to be had about that, particularly with Pep's comments about not being able to play three times in a week, whereas you don't have that necessarily with Kane. I suspect that we'll get minutes out of him all the time. But that third forward spot, in the past, it's been a bit of a burner spot. You either go in at the 4.5 bracket and you just accept that they're probably not going to play, or you accept, like I do with Sam Greenwood, that he's going to get your point probably every week. And that was fine, because if I needed someone to come off the bench, I'm happy with that. But I'm really looking at my team and thinking, that third forward spot is valuable in the game right now. We've got players like Welbeck performing well. 19 points in his last two fixtures is a really, really nice place for Welbeck to be. Good form, good motivation, team playing well behind him, lots of creativity from the likes of Gross and Trossard. So that's all really positive. Then you've got Toney. And Toney, for me, every time I mention his name, feels like a bit of a kind of a bullet to the heart, really. He's the one that got away for me. I had him in my team the entirety of preseason when I was adamant that I wasn't going to go with Jesus and I was going to stick with Toney, because it meant a nicer looking team, had more budget to move around elsewhere. And the preseason form from Jesus meant that I ended up swapping out Toney for him instead and picking a cheaper option next to him. But I feel like Toney was the one that got away. And right now, that three forward strategy with Kane or Haaland alongside Jesus, and then one of Toney or Mitrovic or Welbeck, feels like the right thing to do. Would you agree?
Yeah, again, it's not necessarily always moving away from big at the back, because if I sell Saka, for example, you sell that 8 million midfielder, you can also go and do something very similar and getting up. You know, selling Saka to Ivan Toney would make a lot of sense looking at my team, or anyone with an 8 million midfielder could go and do something similar. I do like Mitrovic, Welbeck and Toney. I think it would be Toney that I go with. That Brentford team looked like they want to score goals every single game and score a lot of them. And Toney's sort of goal involvement is really high, whereas Welbeck does, that Brighton team do share the goals around a little bit more. But if you know that if Brentford are going to score two or three goals in a game, Ivan Toney is going to get something in them. And then again, he's likely to be on penalties as well, where we know that as well. And he showed that last season. He started the season really well. The fixtures for them are pretty similar between Brentford and Brighton. And just on that slight goal involvement aspect, I'd probably favour Tony. Mitrovic is an interesting one. Again, got the winner at the weekend. The fixtures are less good for Fulham on the horizon. One of his teammates really stood out as a strong performer this week, and Andres Pereira, our cheap midfielder that everyone seems to be going with, got 3 bonus points in a 3-2 win, despite only getting an assist. These are the types of things and types of stats you only tend to hear from the likes of Reece James, Cancelo and Trent, the fact that he's picking up bonus points despite not really in theory being involved in the FPL returns. But again, he was joint top for chances created this week. He's looked really good on set pieces as well. I really like him. Is there a point that comes that we need to be starting him more regularly? He was on my bench. Some people started him this week. I wish I had started him, but I didn't really have room. But he again looked really good. His link up with Mitrovic so far this season has definitely been impressive.
I mean, I started him this week and it was really backwards and forwards. And on Saturday morning, I was kind of like, do I start Leon Bailey? Do I start Andreas Pereira? And I was all over the which one do I do? And in the end, I started Pereira because I felt like his route to points was a little bit better than Bailey's. And I wasn't exactly sure what Gerrard might do in terms of the starting lineup that Villa might put out. Plus, Fulham had had a better start to the season than Villa. So I was like, let's go and back Pereira. He's on set pieces, take some corners. He's the most attacking player in that team, bar Mitrovic. And his chemistry and the relationship with Mitrovic, like you say, is amazing. But what I love about him is that the underlying stats, he just is a bonus point magnet. So he's going to pick up the underlying BPS constantly over the course of this season because he's going to be involved in the way that Fulham play and the ball goes through him a lot. So the successful passes and all of that stuff is going to add to his appeal. So any attacking return that you get out of Pereira is going to give you likely bonus points in that game. Now, Fulham's fixtures are going to be a challenge over the course of the season because they are a newly promoted side and they're going to come up against some tough opposition over the season. But we've already seen against Liverpool, and okay, it's Liverpool that aren't in good form, but we've seen that they can play well against the bigger clubs. They can close things down. And at 4.5 million, he is going to be a player that you can easily bench. Now, as you say, the risk is that you then bench the points as they come in. And I think, you know, his ownership is good, but he was only played by about 6% of those owners this time around. So actually he ended up being a big differential for me. And that was really nice to have those points come in. So I think for me, he is the obvious. And if you don't have him, you should just be investing. He's the obvious fifth midfielder, but he's the obvious fifth midfielder that you don't want to be the fifth midfielder, if that makes sense, because you want him to be able to play. And that means having somebody in that fourth midfielder spot or being prepared to go with three at the back and then play your five midfielders if that's your strategy. And I think that's probably on a wild card where I'll look to move to. I'll look to be in a position where I can bench Andreas when I want to, when the fixtures are tougher, but also enable me to play him more by taking some of the money out of my defensive line, reinvesting it up top in the third forward spot. And just a little shout out before we talk about some of the big talking points and wild cards and stuff like that to Shay Adams at Southampton, because Shay Adams came on, played for 32 minutes. In that time, completely changed the game. Got 2 goals, all 3 bonus points. He was top for BPS across the entire game in terms of the number of underlying points that he picked up. And he did that in 32 minutes. Now, I don't think you should be investing in Shay Adams right now. I think that third forward spot is way too important to be putting Shay Adams in there. But if he gets the starts in the games that they've got coming up and continues to play in the way that he did in this one, and it's consistency with him, isn't it? Like, he was fantastic in game week 3, but we haven't always had a consistent Shay Adams over the last few years. But if we do get some consistency, maybe he could be another option to kind of rotate in with Tony and Mitrovic over the course of this season as we move around that third forward spot.
Impressed by him. And actually, I think a lot of people think, okay, 2 goals off the bench, he massively must have overperformed what you did expect from him. And he did, but still amassed a total of just under 0.5 XG over 32 minutes, which still is really impressive. 3 shots, all in the box, and 2 big chances is still really good to come on and get that in 32 minutes. I think the big thing is Manchester United and Chelsea at home in the next 2. It does feel like a wait and see if I was buying in a forward, as much as I was impressed by him at the end of that game when he did come on, and expect him to get minutes. Those 2 games, I feel like, are games that they could get goals in and they could attack well in. Manchester United and Chelsea have definitely shown defensive weaknesses in, but I'd want to see him do that in those 2 games before I went and bought him, because we do know that he has been, and Southampton generally have been, quite hit and miss over the past 6 or so months.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think for me, and maybe this leads us into talking about wild cards, because at the end of each game week, I sit and I look at my team and I think, how many changes would I like to make here? How many players that I am looking at investing in am I absolutely certain are going to continue with the vein of form that they're in? And a number of the ones that we've talked about, I am. So players like the Leeds boys, I would be very keen to invest in them. The likes of Tony. We mentioned briefly Gundogan, but he's another one that I think you can offer some great value for money. 7.6 million, cheaper than Foden, back-to-back returns, fifth most creative midfielder in the game. Only Haaland and KDB have returned more points at City than he has. So players like him, players like Tony, players like Pereira, if you don't already own him, the Arsenal boys, if you don't own them, the likes of Martinelli, if you're in the 20% that still don't own Jesus, then now could be a good movement for the wild card. But there's a number of players that I'm looking at thinking, I would just like to see what happens with you over the next couple of weeks, because there's a lot of momentum that goes into the start of the season. And we know that the first few game weeks of the season, there's always some funny results where teams are kind of getting used to their new players or their new manager, or they're getting used to the new league, opposition they've not played against before. So game week 3, game week 4, game week 5, they are the game weeks that I really focus in on what's happening, because this tends to be the time when we start to see what clubs might actually look like over the course of the season, and whether players are in just in purple patches that are going to die off quickly, or whether they're in a vein of form that might go long term. And I think, you know, for me, that's why now isn't the right moment for a wildcard. But there's been quite a lot of chatter in the community about wildcarding now, and a lot of managers kind of getting a little bit trigger happy with looking at what their team could look like. Is it something you've thought about?
It's something I've thought about, again, when I saw Trippier get sent off and I was suddenly a few transfers that I wanted to make. And then when it got rescinded, I tried to come back to reality and think, okay, this is not how I play the game. I'm not a game week 4 wildcarder. It's probably the earliest I'd ever want to play it. I don't think, you know, going into game week 2 or game week 3 is enough. I'd want to play it a little bit further down the line. And I think we're starting to get enough of an understanding that you could play one. But as you say, every game week that goes past, you get 30% more information, 25% more information. And it's very easy for things to change very quickly. So for example, Rodrigo, he would be in pretty much every wild card that I think people would be putting together at the moment. But if he then, again, Brighton away in game week 4 doesn't do anything, and Trent and Robertson at home to Bournemouth in game week 4 go and do really well, your wild card for game week 5 might end up looking really, really different to the team you'd put together now. That's my issue with doing. I think there are enough swings and there's enough different in information to what we know now compared to the start of the season that I can see why you'd potentially want to play it. But I think the risk of it reverting back to what we did expect to happen is too great. The likes of Trent, the likes of Robertson doing really well, those 8 million midfielders, I'm sure they're going to come good at some point. That if you're suddenly moving your squad structure away from having only 2 premium defenders, no 8 million midfielders, and throwing all that money up front, for example, you run a risk of that happening and you not being able to get back to it. And I think we're too early on to know for certain that our Trents and our Robertsons are not where we want to put the money.
Absolutely. And I think right now, when you're looking at maybe selling somebody like Trent, if I just sell him and I downgrade him to somebody like Perisic and I use that money to upgrade Greenwood and go in with Tony instead, that's done in a couple of transfers. And if I don't do that this week, because I want to wait and just give Trent the game against Bournemouth to see how that happens, and I do it going into game week 5, if in game week 5 suddenly I realize actually this was a horrible mistake, then it's easy to play my wild card then going into game week 6 and rectify those issues. But if you wild card out these big hitters and completely change fundamentally the way your team is structured, you're going to struggle to get these players back in then if and when they start performing well. And players like Trent, I don't see me being without Trent for large swathes of the season. Whilst Liverpool are in difficult veins of form, whilst players like Thiago are out, then maybe that's the time where we want to be without him. But I do want a strategy that allows me the scope to go back in. So I think even if you are wildcarding at the moment, wildcard with a view that you want to have flexibility in your team. Don't take everything out of the midfield. Don't take everything out of the defence. Keep some of that budget available so that you can kind of play with the way that your team looks after the wild card and make sure those transfers work, so that for those weeks that remain between you playing your wild card and the unlimited transfer window for the World Cup, you have flexibility in your squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a player that you've mentioned there that I feel like we've mentioned all throughout this So I feel like we should cover him, and that is Ivan Perisic at Tottenham. Again, game week one, everyone wanted him, and then we worried that he wasn't going to play, which he didn't in game week one. Came on in game week two and got the assist for the equaliser against Chelsea. And then in game week three, we saw what he was really capable of. Again, a clean sheet, an assist, and maximum bonus points. Really impressive from him. Again, the big concern is how many minutes he's going to get when you start playing three games a week, as we've seen potentially with Haaland when they start playing game week four, five, six, which comes in really quick succession. I'd probably expect, you know, game week four, game week six, with a rested midweek, when we're hearing Conte say that he's not fully fit, he's not seeing the Perisic that he knows and loves quite yet. But I think game week three, we're going to see a lot of transfers in after that. He looked really good. The position maps, he's playing up there alongside Son as well for just sort of a half the price that Son is coming in at as well.
Antonio Conte loves a wing back. You know this from his time at Chelsea. I am getting to know this and understand this from the moves that we're making in the transfer window. We've got some really good wing backs now and a lot of options in those wing back positions. Now, Perisic, I think, is the best. He's the best one that we have in our squad across both sides of the pitch. But I don't think he's fully fit yet. I did expect him to play against Wolves, but I also expected him to get substituted for Sessegnon at some point during the course of that game. Now, the question was, would that substitution happen before or after the 60-minute mark? And would it happen before or after any attacking returns? And what we saw is it happened after 60 minutes and after he got the assist and he picked up the bonus points as well. So the perfect match if you brought him in ahead of game week three. I think he'll play this weekend against Nottingham Forest. I think he's starting that one. My concern is that West Ham game in game week five, the midweek action. Will Perisic be able to play on Sunday afternoon and then play again 3 days later and then play again the following weekend against Fulham? So my guess is that Sessegnon will get one of those games, but they'll both probably get minutes in all of them. So I suspect that Perisic will start against Forest with Sessegnon coming on. It might flip against West Ham in midweek with Sessegnon starting and Perisic coming on, and then flip back again at the weekend. I do think that he sees Perisic as being a very important Champions League player. And my concern around the Champions League starting is that we might see Perisic playing in those games and Sessegnon getting more time in the Premier League. As a Spurs fan, I'm delighted about Perisic. As an FPL manager, I'm still a little bit cautious because I am worried about the threat of rotation. And you don't want to have a player that you're starting in your team that comes on for 30 minutes. Now, yes, he can come on for 30 minutes and score goals in that time. But if you're investing in a defender, you really do want them to be getting the clean sheets. And Spurs look like they're more solid this season. Now, with Romero out, maybe that solidity isn't as great as it would have been with him present. But I do see clean sheets for Spurs this season and I would like to be invested. It's just a case of waiting and see. When Doherty's fully fit on the other side, however, he'd be one that I'd invest in.
Yeah, I suppose Doherty's not fully fit at the moment. So is Perisic in your transfer plans? Are you buying him this week?
I don't think I'm going to buy him this week. I think I'm going to wait and see. So I'm looking at my team thinking there's a number of changes I want to make, and Trent Alexander-Arnold is kind of one that is on the hit list, as is Luis Diaz. But I don't really want to sell them ahead of Bournemouth. So I think I'm just going to hold fire this week, roll my transfer, have two going into the midweek games next week, knowing that I've got flexibility then to have that extra bit of knowledge and data before I make any major changes, and then potentially wildcard ahead of game week six, depending upon how things go in game week five. What about you? Any thoughts on transfers so far?
I still am looking at Trippier, Wolves away, and then a difficult fixture in game week five as well as a potential move to Perisic. I know the short-term fixtures for Tottenham are really nice. I've also got an eye on Saka. He's not been that impressive. Arsenal scoring goals, but Fulham at home this week again. Just don't feel like I really need to sell him this week. So I think rolling the transfer again, going into game week five, is a much better strategy. And then I can use those two free transfers to do a little bit more with it and potentially upgrade somewhere and downgrade somewhere else if I wanted to get Ivan Toney in, for example. Wait and see one more week on exactly what's going to happen. And the captaincy armband is currently on Mo Salah at home to Bournemouth.
Even after last night's performance?
Again, I just think that Bournemouth fixture is too good to ignore. And I do expect a Liverpool bounce back. I said it after game week one that they didn't perform well, that game week two they'd come out and perform really well. It didn't happen. I said it going into game week three. I feel like I'm saying it again going into Bournemouth at home in game week four. I still trust them that there is going to be this big bounce back. Klopp's not going to let them get away with this for very much longer. One of the next couple of games is going to be a big win, and Bournemouth at home for Salah, I just can't seem to ignore. But Haaland with Crystal Palace at home, then you've got Jesus with Fulham at home, or we've got Nottingham Forest for the Spurs guys as well. sounds like you're not going with Salah as your captain.
Took it off him last night after the performance. I was just like, I can't. I looked at that Liverpool performance and thought, what's going to be different? So yes, they're going to be at home. The crowd at Anfield will lift them. Yes, it's not quite such a derby game. So maybe there's not so much emotional stuff that happens alongside it. But I just don't think Liverpool look on it right now. And with the captain's armband, I want to be invested in a team for my captain that I'm confident will score multiple goals, not just maybe snatch one or get a late equaliser or struggle. So Arsenal for me are the ones that I'm looking at. And actually, Martinelli is really catching my eye as a potential differential captain this week. Like, he's in really good form. I think the reality is I'll end up giving it to Jesus because his ownership is so high. The only way to make the Jesus points work for you anymore is to hand him the captain's armband. The fixture's nice. They're in great form. They're top of the league. They've not dropped any points so far this season. So Jesus is the one that I'm kind of thinking I'll probably hand the armband to. If I was brave, which I'm not right now, but if I was, I would take a risk on Martinelli this week, though. I think against Fulham, he could have a really good game.
Yeah, I do like the Arsenal guys. The issue with me having triple Arsenal attack to then put the captaincy armband on them, if let's say they don't pull out the performance or Fulham do a job against them, as we've seen them before, I feel like that's too much investment. So I think I'm going to stick with Salah for this one.
Oh, fingers crossed it pays off for you.
Yeah, exactly. Let's hope so. Anyway, so that is all for today. So don't forget that the FPL pod will be back on Thursday with an in-depth preview of all the talking points ahead of game week 4. Good luck to you and your teams, and then listen out for another Off the Bench podcast once the dust has settled on this weekend's FPL action.
Bye, guys.
Bye, and good luck.